We'll roll out this rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of December 2006, this is the rain report. Just a reminder that the FCC amateur enforcement log you used to listen to is back now as a downloadable MP3 and podcast from therainreport.com. Don't forget the when you type in the address, therainreport.com. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. This is a first for the rain report, 2 weeks of reruns in a row. We figure that if the networks can do it for upteen weeks a year, we can do it for 3. But don't run away. It's a terrific two-parter program about how to organize and host a successful ham fest. As an aside, there's a Chicago FM repeater club in particular that could really benefit from this. However, they didn't in 1992 when this program was aired, and probably won't now. Ah, but I digress. If you're involved in planning or participating in a hamfest sometime in 2007, have a pencil, crayon, or other writing utensil handy to take some notes.
This is the rain report. How many times has this happened to you? You set your alarm for 6 o'clock Saturday morning, load up the car, grab your call sign identifier, and head off to the long-awaited and much-anticipated local hamfest, only to be disappointed when you get there and find what could be more accurately called a junk fest. Just what does set the successful ham fests off from the mediocre ones? Kevin Karamanis, WD6DIH, knows. As national sales manager for Yaesu USA in Cerritos, California, Kevin travels to some 25 ham fests annually and really knows of what he speaks, both from a commercial vendor perspective as well as from an individual one. Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with Kevin on the Rain Spotlight.
The first off, the most important thing at Hamfest is promoting it. You need to do a lot of promotions ahead of time, and if you've ever had a chance to go to Hamfest, most of the ones we go to now are very good. There are some that are struggling that need what we call a kick in the pants, but they don't always do. There's a lot of things that can be done. Promotions are the most important thing. The top shows are always promoting 6 months in advance. I think that's a key. Another thing is to offer a lot of prizes up front, even if they're smaller prizes. I think that's helped out quite a bit in the past for people. If you can get prizes and ahead of time, and you don't have to offer one big prize, but a lot of small ones. That's really a good, and advertise that ahead of time, because everyone wants to win a prize. I know I do, and everyone out there does. So offer a lot of smaller prizes, more winners that way. Orlando show last year, I want to mention them. They did something nice. They took a picture of all the people that were at the show, the manufacturers. They went ahead and they are published that the following year, so they show everybody, look what you missed out on, and it really draws the people there. And that's also a good one. Also, for those that not everyone in the family may be a ham or not a ham yet, you ought to offer spouse trips. Even if you have a day trip to the shopping mall for the spouse or even something for the kids to do, that's always good, because that way then those of us that want to attend the show, we can always have a lot of free time and enjoy it. Another big draw that a lot of people mentioned to us that makes or breaks a show is what type of forums you have. And if you have really good forums there, whether it be Skywarn or anything, something technical about antennas or anything alike, even forums, there's some new good forums out now about teaching young teachers how to teach ham radio in the class. That's good for ham radio, and it works to bring a lot of new hams. And I think the biggest feature that most hams are missing out on, especially when they're promoting some type of a ham show, and we're trying to emphasize that, is when you go to a ham show, typically the prices are pretty good. They're usually better than most because you've got several dealers there. And if you've got a few manufacturers, they're promoting the product, and a few dealers, it's usually going to be the best prices in that particular area for the year. And if everybody wants that best buy, it's the best time to go. And sure, it's going to cost a few dollars to go to a ham show. The average price of a ticket, by the way, is about $6, which is pretty good. California, it's obviously a lot more, and the East Coast a little bit less, but it's worth the money to go to it, and I think that if you try to do that, you spend a little money to get in. I think it's worth your while.
Let's take some of these in detail. First of all, regarding the preparation, what if Joe County Hamfest or Ham Radio wants to have a Hamfest? What are the steps that you recommend they take in order to prepare for one?
Okay, that's a good point. Start with the basics. Typically in the past, and I got involved with this many, many years ago, it was whoever showed up at the meeting that wasn't there to defend themselves, they were always picked to do the ham show. That's not the way to do it. You try to find somebody that has hopefully a little extra time on their hands and can go around, and even if it's talking to the other local clubs, you set like a list of priorities, and usually you want to plan at least 6 months to advance or a year in advance. And I'm talking for small or large shows. It doesn't make much difference. A large show you want to do farther in advance. Go around and talk to other clubs. Try to get them involved. You might even want to offer them a small space at your booth to help them promote and get all their members there. So you make sure you try to go out. Also, you might want to do is don't put out a flyer, but put out a 2 or 3 page flyer showing all the activities that are going to be there and why you'd want to be there. And you want to get that out 3 or 4 months early. And maybe, and here's a trick that works really well now, is if the ticket price is, let's say, $6, put a spot in there to pre-register for $1 off. And that usually will give you a good idea how much money you're going to have ahead of time to help put on the show. But planning is the key. And I think also is you must put some sort of prizes in there for a draw, as I mentioned earlier. So if you pass out the information to all the local clubs and get that out, plus offer prizes, I think also you should set up a committee that's set up somebody that's just in charge of your vendors to make sure all their needs are met, and also set up, like I say, a community, we call it community relations, or somebody that can go around to all the other ham clubs that may not be helping you, but at least work with them and make them part of it so that your ham fest isn't a one club, but many, many clubs can put on a really good ham fest and get the word out easier.
One idea that seems to go over well here in the Chicago area is on the pre-registration, that is, the tickets that are sold ahead of time, especially if you have a reasonably nice price, is very effective to have a double stub or maybe even a triple stub to encourage people to buy tickets ahead of time.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. We do a lot of testing and marketing as manufacturers, and we talk to people, and we ask, why do you come to the show? And most often people, they want to win a prize or free radio, and that's important, you know, not to mention to meet the vendors or manufacturers or dealers. And also, it's a great place to meet all your friends. But yeah, if you can get the and have a prize, the most common mistake people make is even for a small ham fest, they'll buy one prize, and maybe it's an HF radio or a mobile radio, when maybe they should buy 2 or 3 radios, have a pre-registration prize, also have a prize maybe the first day there. Maybe if it's a 2-day show, have one the first day and the second day. That way, every day seems like somebody's winning something, and it keeps the atmosphere festive.
Okay, so we've got the committee put together now to organize a ham fest. How do we find the facility?
Well, Hap, that depends on, once again, your area. I'll tell you one ingredient that's worked very well lately is we've seen a trend. The last 2 years, a lot of people used to go to the convention centers when they weren't as busy. And now I've seen that Orlando and Charlotte and a few other cities that have almost doubled their population, they've gone ahead and they've picked locations like the fairgrounds. And there's nothing wrong with the fairgrounds. As a matter of fact, there are better places if you can find a community center, depending on your show, or even a fairgrounds, because they'll allow you to have antennas up. A lot of the civic centers now are very stringent about that and fire regulations, but the Orlando show or Charlotte, which have grown, they've actually doubled in size since they've moved out of the downtown convention centers and moved to the fairground type atmosphere. It allows overnight parking as well as antennas and experimenting. So I would recommend that no matter where you are, most places there's always a weekend available and usually some good time, and the open area sure helps also versus like a civic center type environment, which is a little more stringent on regulations.
You're listening to Kevin Karamanis, WD6DIH, National Sales Manager for Yaesu USA, unraveling the mysteries of successful ham fests. Hap and Kevin will return in a moment. This is the RAIN Report.
You are listening to the RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
Just how big a facility does a ham fest really need? How do you determine that?
Well, Hap, once again, that'll vary by location. But as a rule, and for those of you who've been to Dayton, that's by far a place that's so big now that it's almost outgrown its where it's at now. But by and large, like you said, the Wheaton Ham Fest is 5,000 people. You're roughly going to need. It depends on the formula of how many people you are going to invite to the show. But if you can target 5,000 people, you want to start off with maybe, I'm guessing now, 80,000 square feet. And it all depends, too, if you have a flea market. If you get an indoor flea market or an outdoor flea market, you can save maybe some of the area there for more of the commercial type exhibitors. But flea markets really draw people. And I'll tell you, some of them have started to leave flea markets off because of cost considerations. But that is a great way to bring people in. And even if it's an outdoor flea market on the very first day, that allows people to sell their gear and get some money to buy something new. Another tool that most of these people will look for also is to try and and give them some sort of, and it's hard to do, a guarantee of rooms. I know most places, if you can tell them you're going to have enough visitors and you can block off 200, 300, 400, 500 rooms, depending on the side of the show, they're more willing to give you some extra exhibit space nearby. And usually the hotel will work with the Civic Center Fairgrounds and tell them how many people are coming in, and they'll give you an extra room for free, a little extra room there, which is kind of handy.
How do you know whether or not to charge for tables, for flea market tables? Should you all the time? I mean, it's a nice form of revenue, but will that chase away potential flea market customers?
Again, it's on an early, I would say on a startup show, I would recommend just charging. I think you should charge something, but I, once again, whether it be a fee to help cover the cost, whether it be just a couple of dollars, I don't think anybody's going to squabble about. I've been to many flea markets where it's $2 or $3 a table, and I don't think anybody, that's almost like saying it's for free. But I think you should charge something, because if you don't charge a fee, people reserve a whole bunch of tables, and then if they don't show up, you're it'll look like, uh-oh, it's not a success. So what I recommend to most people to do is charge a fee and at least get something in advance. Maybe it would be a couple dollars for a 6 or 8 foot table. That way then you're going to have some revenue coming in, and it gives some sort of commitment so the people will show up. Flea markets, I'm a firm believer that some of the best shows that we go to, and of course Dayton is one of them, and a few others in Miami and Orlando and all the rest, they have flea markets and they do very well, and they do charge a few dollars. Obviously Dayton's a little more money, but flea market is a very integral part of ham radio. If you can't sell your gear, obviously you're not going to buy the new gear, and it's a great place to meet old friends too in the flea market.
We've got the facility. The Ham Fest is actually going to be coming off at a certain date. How do we effectively promote it?
Well, back up 1 second. You mentioned the date first off, and what I recommend you do is whether it be ARRL, any of the magazines, most of them have a schedule. Make sure you look and make sure you plan ahead so you don't have a conflict. You want to make sure you don't have a conflict with any local shows. That's the primary reason, reasoning behind it. Because if you do have a conflict and you've got, and when this happens quite a bit, people will be in the same, within 100 miles of each other having Hamfest, you're both not going to do real well. So try to pick a date first off that's not going to be a conflict. Second of all, once you have a date, and it's never too early to start promoting a show, I really believe that. Most of the local clubs that have gotten started and grown fairly big, once again, have gone to some of the larger clubs surrounding them and put in small advertising, and whether it costs a few dollars or whether it's free, and tried to promote it. And I think that going through, when you're a small club, a small newsletter, that's a great way to get started. Or if you're a mid-sized club and really want attendance, it doesn't hurt to pick out a small advertising in one of the local magazines. But as you know, on ham radio, the best advertisement is word of mouth, and on the packet bulletin boards or on the repeaters. If you mention it now and then, that definitely will, that's the best advertisement, and it doesn't cost anything.
If you have a repeater controller that you can program in that has a digital voice recorder, or even if it doesn't have a digital voice recorder, it has some programmability, you can promote it periodically, especially the week or two beforehand. And, of course, with all the nets that there are, you mentioned repeaters. Indeed, on repeaters just in passing, but especially to promote it on the nets, you get a lot of mileage out of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
In the facility itself, one of the weak points I have found is the very poor public address systems. Can you address that issue?
Yeah, it's this once again goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the Hamfest. Fairgrounds, when you have a Hamfest at your local fairgrounds, they generally don't have a very good PA system. It'll echo and regurgitate, as we call it, and it's tough to find out what's happening. One of the ideas, and I'm not sure if it's legal or not, people have talked about is, especially for the drawings, they'll go ahead and pick a Simplex channel, and as long as they're IDing, they'll go ahead and give the information out there. They'll have a local, obviously a local repeater frequency, but along the lines during the Ham Fest, they'll have a local Simplex channel for the latest information inside the building, and I think that's an excellent idea. As a matter of fact, some of the better Hamfest, and we try not to keep it too commercial, but some of the medium to larger size Hamfests will actually have a Simplex frequency. So if any person that has a flea market table or any person that has a commercial exhibit can go ahead, and they know whatever the frequency is, let's say it's 140.655 as an example, we know that we can get on there and say, okay, I'm a small booth, and can you send somebody over to watch the booth for a minute while I go to the restroom, or why I take a break and walk around, or we need something to drink, and that works very well in lieu of the once again the PA system.
course, now you're in a gray area, because if you did that at Dayton, someone would raise holy heck about it, because after all, Dayton is an extremely profitable ham fest.
It's funny you should mention, I don't know what the numbers are. I've heard some outrageous numbers, but I think Dayton's very profitable. And once again, when you're looking at 30,000 people plus, I mean, who can actually count that many? I'm sure that there probably is at least that many. And Miami's 14,000 plus. There is a lot of money being made. Most of it, for the most part, goes back to the ham club. But it's one of those gray areas that I think that's going to be looked at in the future. We use it as a last resort. Another option, too, that we use, which has worked very well at some of the shows, it just started a couple years ago in Dallas and spreading like wildfire, is the local ham club putting on, or clubs putting on the show. We'll get the local Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts in and bring them in, whether they're hams or not, and you can get them acquainted. And what they do is they'll go around to the different exhibitors and say, you know, we'll watch your booth while you'd like a break. And they also pick up things by being there. They'll also run to the concession stand, because a lot of us can't leave the booth the whole time. And that is a great way to bring young kids in. At the same time, maybe the local Boy Scout or Girl Scout troop can make a dollar or two on a tip here and there, and it's good, because they expose them to ham radio, and plus it helps exhibitors or flea market people at the tables, and it's a win-win situation for all of us.
Kevin Karamanis, WD6DIH, National Sales Manager for Yaesu USA, with some how-tos about organizing a successful ham fest. More from Kevin Karamanis next time. Kevin was interviewed by Hap Holly, KC9RP, on the Rain Spotlight. For the Rain Report, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.
This has been a Rain rerun from 1992. Ironically, this program you just heard was originally aired as part of the Rain Spotlight, a weekly program carried in 1992 and 1993 on a satellite service called the Let's Talk Radio Network, better known as LTRN. LTRN was owned by none other than Blair Alper himself. On SpaceNet 3, Channel 21, 5.8 audio. Just a useless piece of trivia to wrap up this edition of The Rain Report, which is copyright 1990-2006 Rain. All rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.